Welcome to episode 31 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week we look forward to Series 7B and talk about all our theories, our fears, and everything we're looking forward to. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovian name.
And Keir Hansen.
I'm holding up for Catfight.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 31 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we do the same thing everyone else is doing, which is freak out that the Doctor comes back soon. So I am Melissa, joined as always tonight with Jay and Keir. How are you guys tonight?
Doing awesome.
Very good, very good.
Yeah, so here we are. We are 1 week away from brand new episodes of Doctor Who. We never thought we'd make it this far. What are your thoughts? Like this, I mean, this whole episode, this podcast is going to be about our thoughts about what's coming up now. But I never thought we would make it this far, thinking about it just a couple weeks ago. How do you guys feel about that?
This is one of the rougher breaks. You know, for all the programs that I know that we're all kind of enthusiastic about, this break seemed... Even Christmas episode notwithstanding, seemed absolutely arduous.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was just because they kept trickling little bits of news and information to us. We kept getting all these little, you know, teaser promotional pictures, and then we'd get a trailer, and then they're just kind of stringing it along. And it's like, this was the longest wait ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, honestly, it really wasn't even as long as we typically get, because normally it's, you know, we have the all 13 episodes in the spring, and then it moves to, you know, and then we've got to go to the following Easter before we get new stuff, you know, outside of the Christmas special. This year, it's like we had all the, you know, we had the five episodes in the fall. So it's really only been like, what, 5 or 6 months tops? But yeah. Still, it's, you know, yeah, it seemed like it took forever.
Yeah. And you compound that with all the excitement about, you know, all the what ifs and the maybes regarding the 50th events, and it just leaves you hungrier still, because it's like sitting there at the table somewhere in the midst of the restaurant, and you're seeing everyone else's plates go by, and you're waiting for your order. For crying out, I should have ordered that. What the hell's that? What's that thing? Oh crap, I can't have that either.
I think the big part of that is Clara. The fact that, you know, we knew that we were getting a new companion, and then we got surprised with her right up front, and then she died. And then we go through the five episodes, we, you know, mourn the loss of the pawns and everything like that, and then once that was over, we're like, wait a minute. We get more Clara. We get to figure out what the deal is with her. And then it gets to Christmas, and we see her again, and then she dies. And so this entire time, it's been like, you know, we've just been chomping at the bit trying to figure this out. And, you know, they're dribbling out just tiny bits of information and then a whole crap ton of non-news. So it's like you feel like you're drowning in everything they're giving you, but not getting anything of substance. And I think that's what's made this so excruciating.
All right, so speaking of, we have this bit of news where Matt Smith has talked about how this is the biggest event in Doctor Who history, the 50th anniversary episode. So, again, this is more hype that isn't really saying anything, and we have this in the news. We're going to link to it in the show notes. But about this specific, you know, the way that Matt Smith talked about it, what do you guys think? Because it seems as if he's saying, like, they're going to – I don't know, it's going to be so big that maybe like it changes the rules of the show or something, because if they are going to do something big, it should be at the 50th.
Well, yeah, he's talking about how it's going to be a big deal, which obviously, I mean, it's the 50th anniversary, so they're going to have to make it a big deal. And he keeps talking, you know, he keeps using buzzwords and hyping it up, but he's not really saying anything of consequence. He's saying that they're going to, you know, include all of his predecessors and everything, but he doesn't say in what fashion. We've, you know, heard from so many of them that they're not involved or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's basically just a bunch of, hey, big fancy words, pay attention to me, get excited for the show. No information.
Right. Well, this is the exact quote. It's about celebrating everyone that's been involved in it, all the wonderful actors that have taken part before me. So, you know, it doesn't say it's about including everyone that's been involved with it, you know?
True. Well, there's a couple things, you know, we didn't feel necessary to kind of call them out specifically in the link dump or anything, but we'll see. I mean, Barrowman's company has come forward. Team Barrowman came forward and said that, you know, he is not going to be involved. And the world collectively said, ah, you know, and that news. We had Steemo at one point over the last week or two who has said, no, this is not going to be a clip show or anything of that sort. It actually is going to be plot driven. It's going to advance the story of the show where it stands. So it's not going to be entirely encapsulated. We are going to progress somehow. So with that in mind, if you take Smith's sort of enigmatic statement there, I would say that basically to kind of confirms that this will result in some changes to the status of the plot line wherever it leaves off at the end of the series. This will go one step farther, similarly to how this time around the Christmas episode actually did advance the primary storyline.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just a standalone like it always has been. So I think that's what I get out of it anyway.
I mean, it could be really awesome. I mean, there's a lot of potential for this, and everything that they're saying could lead to something really huge. It's just that, you know, we're trying to put together the puzzle and missing huge chunks of pieces. So it's like, yeah, this could look like a really cool picture once it's done, but I have no way of telling.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure.
Hats off to the PR department for the BBC for both this and for what they've been doing with the latter half of Series 7 and keeping everybody shtum on this.
Yeah.
Because they must either have an iron fist that they're threatening over everyone's head for saying or not saying anything, which I would not be surprised later on if they were starting to write Captain Jack into the scripts, but because he opened his trap and said something, they wrote him right out.
That's something I thought about. It was like, yeah, no, you had to go and say something. Yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
Okay, there.
That'll teach you to open your mouth. Yeah. So. And you know what, Torchwood? Yeah, never happening.
Uh-huh. You screwed it up anyway.
Poor John Barrowman.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm not shedding any tears.
His ego. Anyway, so that was that's as far as we've gotten from the Smith camp. Related to the Smith news, not necessarily news from Smith, but about him. There was all of this claptrap that came about over the last week or two as a result of some garbage that the Sun, a UK publication, decided that they were going to put together and start to try to pass off as fact. It was a rumor that we had all talked about weeks back when we found out that Matt Smith was working on some film production. And we thought, great, you know, he's going to be breaking into some new stuff here. And wouldn't that be interesting if that ended up becoming more and more of his time, more and more of his interests. Maybe he starts getting received well by a larger or a different audience because now he's showing up in this new format. You know, could this mean that eventually he decides to tip the scales and step away from the doctor's role? But it wasn't a matter of what the Sun turned into, which was screaming from the rooftops that the doctor is falling, the doctor is falling, and trying to pass it off as fact.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was the same information we already had.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the thing. We must have talked about it. Well, it was at least a good month ago.
Yeah. It was when the news first came out that he was joining the movie.
Right. But this junk in the Sun was just published within the last, you know, week or two. And this apparently is par for the course. They will take a rumor that either didn't get enough credibility because, you know, it was quickly dispelled, they'll wait a little while, trump it up and try to put a quote or two behind it or a soundbite to give it some sort of a faux credibility and pass it off as news again. So.
Yeah, the BBC responded to it really quickly, but the interesting thing is how they responded to it. And they said, all right, here's the exact quote. It says, "Sorry, folks, but even we don't know what's going to happen at Christmas. It's not been written yet, but Matt loves the show and is starting to film, started filming the unmissable 50th anniversary and the new series starting on Easter Sunday. So, I mean, there's no denial there. And then, Smith responded himself. He goes, "I'm very happy doing it. I do the anniversary special, then the Christmas special. At the moment, it's 2013, and we'll see what 2014 holds." So even in their, you know, even in their saying that the Sun is full of crap, and they did not deny it. They didn't say that, no, that's untrue. They just said, how are you going to guess at that stuff? We don't know what's going on yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're being about as gracious as they can about it, because they're not going to start getting into a pissing contest. But just the same, it's like, it's the equivalent of a high school kid who's trying to apologize on behalf of a second grader who's having a meltdown. You don't want to make the kid feel bad, but by the same token, you don't want to, you know, feed their behavior by giving them more attention.
Right.
So that's the way I look at it. I still think that our theory holds, that this is something where they'll get involved with some of these other productions, and it's a long ways away. You know, by the time a lot of this stuff airs, he could be at that point, you know, three film productions deep and thinking about, well, you know, I'm going to have to figure out something to do when they decide that it's time to move on to another actor. Could I take jump the gun on this so that I'm ready before they start approaching me about it, and I have my contingency plan or whatever it is. Right. Somebody was talking with me about this and saying, you know, could this mean that you'll see him gone by the end of this season? And I said, well, you know what, look at it realistically from the case of the viewer's perspective. When we came into 11th Doctor, because it was a new production team, it was a new showrunner, we had very little to hold on to that was familiar. New Doctor, new TARDIS, new companions, you know, all new game plan. And there was very little to hold on to carry us over. If they have some successes with Clara as a companion, and she's compelling and interesting and mysterious, and there's still things at the end of this season that we want to figure out, then that could work if they wanted to see Smith out, because she could be the carryover. You know, she could give us that bridge into whatever the next Doctor is. But I think something like that would work better after another full season under both of their belts, because we've already seen signs of the fact that she as a character brings out some interesting or different things out of the Doctor, which we'll talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. But I want to give that time to develop. I think we've got a ways to go.
Oh yeah.
So with that being said, what do you think about the interview about Jenna Louise Coleman talking about how she gets flirty with Matt Smith, and how, you know, she says something about how they're like brother and sister, but then they're also really flirty.
Well, that's just her way of sort of defining the character. You know, bear in mind the fact that she's not very familiar with the show's history. You know, she's only seen some of the more recent episodes, and that's it. So she's looking at it from an actress's perspective, trying to define this interaction between the two. And I think to a certain degree, maybe it's just the way that I read out of that interview, she was almost talking as much about the way she behaves with Matt Smith.
Yeah, it was very interesting how she was phrasing things, because it did give it that kind of feeling. But I thought it was kind of weird how she said they're very flirty with each other, but at times it's almost quite brotherly sisterly. I'm like, your boyfriend's on Game of Thrones, not you. Don't say things like that. It's weird.
So that's what kind of family this is.
But one thing she did say, and I find this interesting, she said that Claire is this new human that he isn't used to. Which, to me, that's news. This is the first confirmation that we've had that Clara is human.
Human, yeah. Well, no. I'm not going to say anything negative about this lovely young lady, but she may not be the most eloquent or careful speaker in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say that you know, this is coming out of her mouth, and she doesn't understand. She definitely doesn't understand how Whovians will tear stuff apart like we do. You know, she doesn't understand that, you know, any phrase, any word that you put out there is going to be carefully scrutinized. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could just be that she threw that out and, you know, and it's not completely applicable. She may have understood completely how, you know, frantic we can be over new stuff and threw it out there just to mess with us. Mm-hmm. So we'll... Yeah, but this is the first time that we've ever gotten any indication as to whether or not she was going to be here. So,
right, yeah. So, Well, that's gonna launch us into tonight's discussion pretty well. Let's wrap up some of our other news items here so we can get right into the thick of it. We just a little tiny items, you know, a little more recognition for the show as they picked up Peabody Awards this past week along with a couple of other programs. So nice to see some kudos going around for the program here on this side of the pond, and just, you know, another testament to the increasing interest and capture from U.S. viewers. So hats off for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've also got, the big news this week was that the Last of the Cybermen was changed. The name was changed on Neil Gaiman's episode to Nightmare in Silver, which I think that is much more compelling. I mean, the Last of the Cybermen gave you a little bit to think about, and it was kind of like, but Nightmare in Silver really makes you think, I wonder where this is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you notice there was another coverage of this particular story, where there was a quote from Gaiman where he was saying, or actually it was a quote from Moffat about Gaiman saying, you know, we knew we wanted to have him back after the success that we had with the Doctor's wife, and I knew that I was going to have to give him something really interesting to draw him back in. So when I gave him a call and I just mentioned Cybermen to him, he practically fell in the front door. And they quick jumped to a quick statement from Gaiman saying something to the effect of, I wasn't going to come back until I knew that whatever it was I was going to write was going to be better than what I did in the previous episode.
Yeah, that was the statement that got me, because, I mean, The Doctor's Wife is a fantastic episode. I mean, it is one of the best episodes there has been. So for him to, you know, come back in, you know, like such a fanboy to try and write this episode really, really gets me excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And that, it kind of throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into some of our discussion that we were having. We'll talk about it again in just a couple of minutes about the naming of that episode and what we were trying to glean from that. So, you know, this sort of rolls back on that a little bit.
Well,
but
not necessarily. I mean, all of our theories on it could still stand. I mean, this isn't contradicting any of that. It's just not putting the limelight on it.
Right. And there's still a reason why that was the working title up to this point. So, okay.
And actually, one of the interesting things that I found was that there was a man that found scripts from 1963.
Yeah, and I read about this actually a couple weeks back, or maybe even as much as a month back, but it didn't really gain a lot of attention at the time. I was freaking out about it. I was, you know, tweeting all over about the place. So this guy was he digging through a prop closet or something of that sort?
Yeah, he's a prop maker, and he was actually going through a bunch of the old boxes and stuff at the BBC, and he found these unused scripts. He thought that they were the original scripts, that they were just, you know, stuff that was produced, but this is actually stuff that wasn't ever filmed. It never came to the show, but there's things in there like you know, you see the what would later become the Daleks. You know, it's very clear that this is the idea that they had. You know, stuff about the sonic screwdriver, the beginnings of that and how it's made and things like that. So, I mean, a lot of really interesting lore. If you're into the whole history and where things were coming from and that kind of thing, this could be really interesting information. Now, I haven't seen anywhere that this is going to be released to the public. It's just the fact that somebody has found it.
Right. Well, what they have to do is, because it's still considered to be the property of the original writer and it's not actually BBC intellectual property, they have to get the permission from his estate in order to choose what they want to do with it. They'll go to the Coburn estate and try and see whether or not you know, they'll get the consent to be able to do, whether it's published or whether it gets incorporated or whether it just gets, you know, archived and museum displayed or whatever they choose to do with it. I got a feeling, though, especially with the momentum of everything that's going on this year, they will pursue this pretty hard as part of the lore and the mystique of the show that they want to reclaim.
I think that it would be a brilliant move on their part, and I don't know how quickly it'll be able to happen, but I think it would be absolutely brilliant if they could take this, throw it together into a book, you know, have a couple people make comments on it, do that kind of thing, and release it in conjunction with the 50th.
Yes. Yeah.
'Cause I would pay all the monies. All of it.
Mm.
I mean, this just looks absolutely fascinating. And if you've got the 50th anniversary special going on, you're already paying attention to that the fact that it's been around for 50 years and the beginnings and everything like that, you know, with the docudrama and everything. This book would be a perfect companion, no pun intended.
Yes, it was intended.
Maybe a little bit.
Well, the guy who has these scripts says that the quote is, it may be possible to arrange something for the 50th anniversary of the series in November. So, but it looks like he's trying to get some kind of permanent exhibit set up about Coburn, who wrote the scripts.
Right. Well, because a lot of the material that he wrote that was included into the show and things that we have seen became some of the fundamentals of the universe as we know it. So.
Right, and I would love to see just how reworked that is, or if he had a fully fledged idea of a sonic screwdriver, you know.
Yeah, well, some of these things, as I mentioned, are alternative versions of scripts that did air, you know, sort of alternate tweaks to script editions, and others are completely unused scripts that were meant to be go-tos in case the, you know, one of the ones that they were putting into production fell through or just proved to be a budget breaker, which was a constant point of concern for them in the early seasons. So, cool stuff. Absolutely cool stuff, especially for classic Whovians. Mm-hmm. This is gold.
So we actually have a lot of new content out that is, you know, at both outside of Bells of St. John and some previews of actual clips from it. So I think from this point out, people should know that we might get a little bit spoilery. We're going to discuss, we have the episode names and the, you know, just a brief synopsis of the episodes for the second half of Series 7. So if anyone is spoiler, you know, spoiler phobic,
yeah.
Get out now. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to go into depth in, like, you know, in checking every frame of every publicity shot and whatever, but no, we are going to talk a little bit about it, so yes. Be warned.
Strictly theory.
Yeah.
If you want to get all bent out of shape, you can send your hate mail to Melissa at GallifreyPublicRadio.com.
That's what I do.
It's true.
Well, all right. So we've got the Bells of St. John prequel that just came out.
Right, which to us is now the second prequel.
Yeah.
Which ones do we want to take about first? We have happy prequel and sad prequel. Happy prequel being the action prequel, sad prequel being the playground prequel.
I haven't seen...
Oh, I would have said it the other way around.
I haven't seen the action prequel.
Ah, okay. Well, it's not really a prequel. It's the teaser? Action montage. Okay. Yes, it's a teaser trailer. Yeah. Where it's a bunch of people running, jumping, screaming, yelling, pointing, zapping, crashing, chasing.
So typical hype, yeah.
Yeah. Feeling a bit like the Italian Job kind of thing, you know, racing through London, on the run, you know, scary bits and British police sirens. So, but the more interesting one, in my opinion, was this very low-key, very quiet, and curse you, Murray Gold. They allowed him to score this little piece as well. It ran, just under 2 minutes?
Maybe about 2 minutes, I think. It may have been over, I'm not sure. But yeah, 2 minutes, you're in, you're out, you're moving on.
But you're feeling sad.
No. Alright, if you haven't seen this already, then we've already warned you like four times, so get over it. I would have liked it better had the little girl just actually been a random little girl and not Clara.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, it's
explain.
Well, it just seemed really obvious. You know, she's sitting there talking to the little girl and I'm like, and she says something about her mom and I'm like, oh, it's the mom. No, wait, the mom's not Clara. The little girl must be. Yeah. And it was just such a glaring thing that by the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, that's how they went. Okay. Yeah. It would have been, I don't know, it almost seemed like, hey, look, they keep running into each other, beating us over the head with it. And, you know, I think it would have been better had he just been talking to some random little girl.
At least she didn't die this time.
That would have been a great wish.
Cracked her skull.
No, that would have made it much more interesting. And then he'd have been like, Clara?
Womp womp.
They're going dark with this.
Really? Well, so, but what can we gain from this? If this was drawn, if this was a prequel, so this is not actually part of the episode airing. Okay, this is a bumper lead into the episode. So does that mean then that as we come into this, will we do a little bit of advance through time in the episode proper so that we do continue to see a young Clara and then we spend the rest of the episode with 20-something Clara?
No, because the way that they've been doing these prequels has been the, you know, just give them a quick little taste and then don't reference them again so that if you don't see the prequel, you're not missing anything. So I think it's just going to be something that gets tacked on, and you're going to go into Bells of St. John, and you're going to run into adult Clara within the first couple minutes.
Adult Clara. Hello.
So, I don't know. It's basically just a way of saying, look, these two are destined to run into each other. You can't escape it. It's, you know, it's fate.
Well, so. It's also a very Doctor thing to meet his companions as children. Have you guys noticed that? I'm thinking Raynette and Girl in the Fireplace, obviously Amy Pond. He meets Rose and Mickey in the one with Rose's father.
True. Well, only insofar as it's a nice way to be able to establish to the companion's mind because of the fact that they meet him at multiple intervals and yet he sort of seems unchanged, that he is this old being. You know, it's one of the best ways to sort of, you know, impress that upon the mind of a child is if they see this face and meet this personality at age whatever, maybe 10, 12, what have you. And then again at age, you know, 20 or 22, they bump into them again, seemingly unchanged. If they can wrap their head around that, then they're sort of priming themselves to be able to understand the full complexity of time travel itself. Maybe. Hmm. Not to mention the fact that it's far easier, you know, the impressionable or the malleable mind of a child, Clara notwithstanding, because she's just an exceptional case of what she chooses to accept and just roll with. She seems to be one of the most... You know, oh, sure, okay, and lets it go. She's more curious than concerned about anything that she's exposed to. So back that up into a child state, and it's this precociousness that Jay was probably one of the quick indicators to you that this must have been a young Clara on the swing set because of the fact that she was so fearless about talking. My mother says I'm not supposed to talk to strangers, and his response, well, yeah, I am pretty strange. You know, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But that was a very endearing thing to me out of that little prequel was the fact that, you know, sad doctor just having his little, you know, dig his toe in the dirt kind of mopey moment there. And every one of his very succinct, quick responses had a lot of poignancy to it.
Yeah.
It was a nice lead back into things.
And one of the things that I got excited about is the fact that, you know, I was complaining last week during our commentary of the Snowman that Matt Smith just automatically goes back into goofy mode and you know, he lost his sullenness basically. Mm. And you kind of saw that come back in this prequel. He's not completely despondent like he was at the beginning of the Snowman, but you can tell that he's still sad. You know, he's still got that depression and you know, most of it's probably coming from Clara, but it's just the fact that he's not completely whole. You know, there's, mm-hmm. He can still very quickly fall back into those patterns makes me excited because I mean, that gives us some opportunity to see him grow more than we have really ever since Matt Smith took over.
Right. Well, now in this episode, so basic premise of the plot line, as far as we understand it is that, in this attempt to try and track down Clara, because he's getting this indication that he's able to find her again, and hopefully we'll get a little bit more insight as to how he feels he knows this, that he ends up, you know, present day in the UK, and we run into this threat of the fact that there is some sort of a possessed state or some sort of a sentient villain in the Wi-Fi around central London. This, to me, I don't know, maybe it's me. This sounds like it's almost tied directly to the snowmen with regard to, you know, the sentience of the snow as part of the intelligence. I don't know. It seems like this could be a way that they could carry that over.
Yeah.
And start to use this villain, I mean, as it refers to in the blurb here, an ancient enemy. Well, hello.
Yeah. Honestly, I hadn't thought of it that way. I was looking at it more like, you know, it's something to do with the Wi-Fi. So it would be, you know, if Oswin had downloaded herself into the path web and somehow was able to, you know, travel into the Wi-Fi on Earth and download herself into another person or something, you know, it's, that's more the take that I was looking at it. But yeah, having the great intelligence or, you know, an aspect of it or something like that could actually really work and help to tie it together really nicely.
Did you guys see the clip with Celia Imrie where with the guy, Alexei or something, and she says, kill him. My conscience says we should probably kill him.
No. Yeah, I thought I did come across that, and that was one of the things that kind of, you know, that flagged in my head.
You guys need to see this clip. It's, you know, it's because I think this could have a big bearing on Oswin. He says about, Clara Oswald, something she doesn't know about computers, and this lady says something like, keep her anyway, and he says, should I download like a computer thing into her? So it's almost like they're downloading things into Clara's consciousness.
They're going the Cylon route with this.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, I mean, you look at this clip and tell me what you think, because I hope that they don't go the route that that she has something to do with the Wi-Fi. Honestly, I'll take Cylon over that. Like, I know... I think this is just going to be like a fun opening episode. They keep describing it as like a Bond adventure kind of thing. Mm. I think it'll be just like a, you know, Doctor and Clara as buddy spies or something.
Yeah, I don't think that well, it depends. I'm not sure if this is going to get the credit. The story itself is going to get the attention that it needs, because it's all going to be focused on the Doctor finding Clara and trying to figure out what the deal is with her. Now, I can see them kind of saying, okay, he found her, but there's something horrible going on, so he can't really think about what the deal is. He just has to accept the fact that she's there and push it off later. But I don't know. I want the story to get the attention it deserves, but I'm not sure if it's going to.
Yeah, I feel similar.
It's going to be upstaged quite a bit. A lot of the episodes for the remainder of this season are going to be upstaged by people trying to crack the Clara mystery.
Yeah. And, I mean, just in the trailer, you know, we get that soundbite from the Doctor telling Clara, you're the only mystery worth solving. So obviously it's something that's going to carry over for a little bit of time. We don't know which episode that comes from, how long it's going to go on, anything like that. So, you know, it could be the entirety of the season. It could be, you know, wrapped up in the first episode. There's no way to tell yet.
It's also a nice distraction from the ultimate question that we were dealing with previously. And do notice, for those of you who were keeping track of all of the little, the teaser trailers about the season to come and all the episodes and all the things that they were crashing around and giving us the Ice Warriors back. And we knew we were going to see these sort of, eyeless, soul suckers and all these other baddies that were going to be showing up. You don't see the silence. So that aspect of the storyline has been put aside for a while. Whether or not we see any occurrence of it in the 50th remains to be seen, but for the remainder of this series, I think they've called that chapter closed.
Or it could be that they wind up showing up in the series finale.
Potentially.
Because we know nothing about that yet, but we'll get to that one.
Okay.
So the next episode that we get is the Rings of Akkaten, and this is saying that, you know, Clara wants to go somewhere exciting. She wants to see the universe. So she goes to the planet of Akkaten. Mm-hmm. The rings of the planet Akkaten. So,
well, here's this is just I didn't see any of the casting at this point. I'm wondering whether or not they're gonna Simply because they're going to be going into a lot of pseudo-Egyptian mythology on this one. They're bound to. Whether they're going to bring Nephi back out again.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Left her on the African plains with a hunter, but she's got full knowledge of the Doctor and all his exploits. He's taken her through time before. I'm wondering whether he might tap into that again.
I don't think we're going to see Nefertiti again. I think okay. we may get some good reference to her, especially with, you know, with the reference that we get. So there might be some in jokes or things like that, but I don't think that we're going to get the actual character back.
Mm. Okay.
Agreed. It
just tripped in my head as I was looking over the promo poster that they had for this one. I'm like, yeah, they could have brought back flirty Nephi again, but we now have another flirty female to deal with. So full up on that. So, and I'm not seeing anything out of this in terms of the synopsis, in terms of any of the theories, the casting, or anything that says this is going to be any great contribution to the grand mystery or schemes for the season. It's just going to be a nice little encapsulated episode. This is, as we often get when we're just a couple of episodes in to a new companion, it's a show me what you got kind of episode.
Yeah.
Where the Doctor decides he's going to impress him or her by taking them to, oh, I'll show you the end of the universe. Oh, I'll show you, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Show you the planet where everything's made out of diamonds, you know. And mm-hmm. So this is our little jaunt.
Yeah. So, but then we get the Cold War. And this one's exciting. You know, this is the return of the Ice Warriors. You know, it's written by Mark Gatiss. So I've got high hopes for this episode. You know, it's basically the Doctor and Clara getting stuck on a damaged Russian submarine in 1983.
Right.
So, you know, height of the Cold War, or, you know, towards the end of the Cold War, but still, it's, you know, there's a lot that they can play with on this, plus the fact that they're bringing the Ice Warriors back. You know, this could be really, really awesome.
Right. It sounds like a bottle episode. What was the one, I think it was Night, where he was on a bus?
Oh, Midnight, yeah.
Yeah, Midnight. It sounds similar to that.
Yeah, and those are always great for creating tension.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know what they're going to end up doing with the Ice Warriors, whether they are just going to be, you know, faceless, or I should say, agenda-less villains, or whether they're going to be given some sort of an opportunity to explain their side, because the best villains out there, as we talked about when we went through the arc, the most compelling villains we ever had to deal with were the ones that could justify their cause. Even though we considered it on the evil side of the coin, there was some reasoning behind it that made some weird sense.
I think that the fact that Mark Gatiss went to Stephen Moffat and said, I want to bring back the Ice Warriors, I want to write an Ice Warrior story, means that he has something specific for them. It's not just like, hey, I want to write a really cool episode and I'm going to use the Ice Warriors as bad guys. He wanted Ice Warriors first. So
right.
I'm sure that he's got a reason behind that. And, you know, I trust the guy. He is a brilliant writer. So I think that this is actually going to turn out to be very fantastic in making the Ice Warriors a really awesome villain.
Mm-hmm. No question. This is going to be one of my most anticipated ones out of the latter half of the season, personally.
Yeah. So, but then we get the ghost story called Hyde, and this, we've seen a lot of the clips, one in the trailer, including the Doctor out in the woods, you know, saying, "I am the Doctor, and I am afraid." And as soon as I saw that, I got chills.
Mm.
You know, the fact that he is admitting to that just kind of makes it, all right, this is going to be scary.
Yep. And this has all the makings of your classic, you know, Mansion in the Mist sort of a story. So, you know, expect if they do this right, it should be kind of Woman in Black, you know, sort of folded in creepy factor. If they do it wrong, it's a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I don't think that they're going to do it wrong. I mean, especially if you look at the poster for it, some of the pictures and stuff, I think that they're going full bore, I'm going to scar you.
Yeah, it definitely, it's like scary. It's not cutesy Scooby-Doo.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that because of the fact that this is going to be one of the opportunities where we deal with something of this supernatural element as opposed to just the an alien threat or a computer threat or something of that sort, that we might this might be an opportunity to stretch Clara's character and see how she does with a true unknown. She seems very willing to roll with and accept what she's been exposed to up to this point, but I'm wondering how she's going to be able to deal with this sort of an afterlife kind of a threat because of the fact that her own mortality is a very odd subject to begin with. So that's what I'm looking forward to see out of this one, is I'm going to be watching her more than I'm going to be watching the Doctor in this one.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they focus on Clara here because, yeah, it would be a great chance to just flesh out her character beyond reason.
Mm. So then we get to one where we know very little, but we want to know the most.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the journey to the center of the TARDIS, and specifically the fact that we have been promised that it's not in name only, and that we are actually going to get to see some elements of the TARDIS's interior workings that we've never seen before.
This just makes me all giddy.
What do we think we're really going to get? I mean, I know we want to say, oh, I want to see the pool. Oh, I want to see the kitchen. Oh, I want to, you know, I want to see where they make souffles and all the cute elements. What do we really think we're going to see out of this? Are we going to see the drive? Are we going to see?
I think that if you're going to put a whole episode on the TARDIS, we've seen the control room. We get the control room all the time. We're going to have a lot of corridors. You know, that goes without saying, but you can't fill an entire episode with just corridors. So, I think we're going to, I mean, they might have a little montage where they walk by and there's a library, there's a sitting room, there's the kitchen, there's the bathroom, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I think we're going to start seeing more of the integral components of the TARDIS, you know, the communication suite, the engines, something, you know, start showing us what it is that makes the TARDIS what it is.
Right.
Have them fix the chameleon or find the chameleon circuit, be like, oh, I just have to plug that back in. Nope. Leave it alone.
Yeah. I got a feeling we are going to get a lot of newly invented techno-temporal jargon thrown at us. So prepare to have new machines and devices invented for your very eyes and ears during this episode, which is fine. I enjoy it. I'm like, you know, how many times can you, you know, put temporal with a dash in front of something and call it a gizmo?
It's the temporal coffee maker.
Exactly.
Tom Baker's Doctor had a room just for boots. I hope they reference that.
That would be great.
Yeah, sweet. Which is probably a room that Matt Smith never goes into because he's always wearing that same horrible pair.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a great reference and a great way to just, you know, a bit of fan wank if they just walked past a room and you had, like, different costumes from different doctors kind of, like, set up in cases.
Oh, yeah, like the Iron Man suite where he has
exactly.
them all in glass.
They just, like, walk by, like, what's in that room? Oh, that's just my old stuff. Yeah.
Well, did you guys, it's linked in the show notes, there's another clip where the doctor walks into the TARDIS and says, don't be a monk, monks are not cool. Did you guys see that one?
No, I didn't.
Man, all right, I apologize then. But anyway, it shows him coming out of, for some reason, a monk's habit and then changing into his regular clothes, but he throws out like all these jackets that he's already worn, and one of them, I thought at first it was Ten's coat, but then I realized it was probably too short to be. Like, maybe it was just like a nod to that. But there was definitely like kind of a wink to the audience, I think, of he was going through all his clothes and throwing them on the floor before he picked out his jacket and tie that he wore.
Okay.
Like the fez and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I'd seen some of the stills, but I hadn't seen the actual clip. I'll chase that down.
All right, well, that takes us into the Crimson Horror, which we don't get a lot of information on. I mean, we get to see Vassra and Jenny and Strax back again. So this is likely to just be some kind of mystery, like a murder mystery or something like that. So, but
which is interesting that they're going to be doing that, you know, right after we've got the Hyde episode, which is sort of a Well, we're going from ghosts to possessions at this point. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see how they're going to differentiate these two in terms of their tone or their feel. Because a lot of it seems like it could have a similar element. And they've done these before. Very similar episodes before, going back to Ninth and Tenth Doctor. So what's going to make these stand out in particular, other than the fact that we're going to have that continuing Clara thread throughout?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that every season, you know, always has at least one or two episodes that are like, oh yeah, I watched that one once. Mm. Yeah. We might run into those, you know, that he's not going to be able to hit a home run every time. So these could wind up being that, you know, just, like, we need something, let's make it scary and hope it sticks, you know. So, but, I mean, that does kind of bring up a topic. I mean, this series kind of seems like it has a much darker feel than it's had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Hyde, you've got the Cold War, you've got the Crimson Horror, you've got Nightmare in Silver. I mean, it all seems very, like, not horror-themed in all of them, but there's a definite, like, you know, not so much fun adventure. It's more, you know, terrible circumstances, and they have to figure it out, or people are going to die.
Right, I understand, and I think that was intentional. It's one of the things that seemed to be a recurrent discussion on any of the interviews with the production team prior to this, was that they were intentionally going dark with a lot of this. They want to bring this back, maybe Strax notwithstanding. But they're bringing back a lot of the elements of the show to something that originally, that they for a while were maintaining that this was a science fiction thriller program that had dark tones, and it was not a children's show. It was, you know, and they were trying to really flex their muscles that way and say, you know what, we can give you some things to think about as you're falling asleep at night. Yeah. But they're going at it pretty consistently with every episode from here on out, with some more than others. But yeah, there's a lot of deeper or darker tones to everything we're coming across here.
Yeah, this is another episode that's written by Mark Gatiss and actually directed by Saul Metzstein. Mm-hmm. So this could prove to be one of the better episodes in this part of the series. You know, it's.
Yeah, I just want to know a little bit more about it. I'd like to know what it is that's going to make this one stand out or make it really, you know, stand apart from the other similar episodes that we've had from the show in seasons past.
And the fact that it's written by Mark Gatiss leads me to think that we're not going to have such a goofball comedic relief version of Strax. I mean, he might still be the comedic relief, but I think it's going to get toned down quite a bit.
Right. And yet,
he's probably going to be the military advisor role primarily in this one, you know. They might be able to crack a joke every now and again, but I think that Gatiss is actually going to give this the dark feel and keep Strax at a minimum.
Mm. I hope so. I think they've used up everything they can with Strax in the comedy bit.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Jay, it might be interesting to see that they actually get into a situation where they can allow him to be his usual militant self.
Right.
Intentionally.
Because seeing that in the snowman was great, because you do get the funny, hey, let's all laugh at the walking potato, but then, you know, the house is under siege, and you see him, like, breaking it down, and you're like, holy crap, this guy knows what he's doing, you know. So seeing that out of him was great, and I'd love to see more of it.
Yeah, without question. Because we don't know how long they're going to continue to work him as the sidekick. There, you know, maybe there is a point where he's able to, you know, serve his penance, so to speak, and go back and rejoin his ranks. Similarly to his nurse's punishment.
But, we'll see. So that leads us into the last of the Nightmare in Silver.
Mm-hmm. Which we do not, with the recent change, as we mentioned in the news, with the title change and some of the little story about how they got Gaiman back involved in the latter half of the season, we still don't know anything about the definitive plot, other than the fact that it's going to absolutely restore the creep factor of our beloved cyborgs. And as you mentioned here, that there is going to be something new. Not just the cyber mats, we've used them for a while, but quote unquote a cyber something else. theories?
I don't know. I think that what they're doing with the Cybermen is great. If you look at some of the pictures that we've got, the redesign they've done on them, you know, they kind of slim the head back and it doesn't have such a prominent, like, facial, like, mask look to it. And it's really given the eyes a different look. And I mean, they look soulless. They look just completely inhuman and very, you know, like, they don't care. It's like they're here to do a job and that's it. And it's, it kind of makes it seem like they're less like the people that they were beforehand. I don't know if I'm making any sense here, but just the way that it looks, at, you know, they've got just the slit of a mouth, and it's very obvious that it's, that it's just a mask over a bunch of computer parts. Mm-hmm. And to me, it makes them look far more intimidating than the previous versions that we've had.
Yeah, their encasement, their entire, body shape and things at this point have gone through so many iterations where now they are looking less and less like just a droid-ish kind of, you know, walk and talk and bucket of bolts. Now it looks more like you're dealing with a suit of armor. You know, this is far more, attack relevant look and feel.
Yeah.
And I'm also just really psyched to see Warwick Davis.
Personally. Oh yeah,
I'm fascinated to know what his character, you know, how much presence he's going to have, because he's a phenomenal actor.
Absolutely, and I mean just the fact that it's penned by Gaiman, just that guarantees right there that this is going to be a fantastic episode. So,
mm-hmm. And that, as we said in the notes there, or in the news segment, that he considers this to be a better script than The Doctor's Wife. Or that was the goal that he set for himself when he put pen to paper on this. Yeah. That's setting the bar really fracking high.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. So.
And then we get the biggest freaking question mark of all. How do we end this crap?
Well,
we have a finale where we've got a little bit of information that's amazing. We have a lot of non-information and big holes.
So, yeah, we've got the series finale that's written by Moffat, and it's going to be directed by Saul Metstein. Moffat says it's one that will thrill you a bit and worry you more. Yes, I think you'll be just a tiny bit worried where you might be going with this one. So we get Jenny and Vaster on Strax back again, mm-hmm. and we have a picture of Strax actually back in his Santaran battle armor.
Yes.
So whether or not that is actually from this episode, we can't say. It's just a picture that was tagged with it. So, but I can't imagine. I mean, the way that they're ramping up leading into the 50th anniversary special, if you're going to put Strax back in his armor, this is the time to do it, because you're going to have to set the bar really high with this series finale.
Mm-hmm. Especially knowing that people are going to be, they're going to be looking for a couple of key elements. They're going to need some sort of closure to one of the two. And I would say that there are sort of two arcs that we're still following through here. There's the obvious Clara mystery, which we don't know necessarily that we are going to get a resolution to by series end. In fact, that might be something that they carry over for a while, where we think we know it, we think we know everything, and then they're going to give us, you know, one more little coda of a question to chew on after the break. But it, on a lesser scale, or I should say it's sort of the B story that's been carrying through all of this, is the mindset of the Doctor through these things. And the fact that he is really starting to, not only has he aged considerably over the course of the 11th.
Like four years.
Yeah, a greater span, or at least they've thrown in there the fact that a greater span of time has passed just on this Doctor alone. He's been doing a lot of wandering. He's been doing a lot of soul searching. We don't always get that out of Smith's behavior, and I still consider that to be one of his shortcomings as far as well, I don't know if it's necessarily his shortcomings or maybe that of the directors and principal writers, that they're not really taking that to heart as much as I would. If you were to have Tenet wander alone for 300 years before he comes back and we see the next episode with him,
he'd be a mess.
Yeah, I would be expecting to see a lot of weight on his shoulders, far more than we were getting out of Smith.
Yeah.
So I don't know who to blame. I don't know necessarily that it's blame involved there, but it's always tripped me up a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they're going to give that a little bit more here where, he finally gets confronted to the point where he has to say, I've been up, I've been down, I've had people with me, I've had people taken away from me, I've had someone new introduced to me that I can't figure out. I'm the one with the questions now, and I'm usually the one who answers the questions, and this is what's weighing on my mind. This is what's driving me crazy. This is what's, what is giving me bad dreams, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I think that would be an interesting way to ramp up some sort of a big finale here. Is this is the Doctor lashing out at over a millennia of everything around him changing and yet remaining the same. The disappointment and the disenfranchisement with everything that goes on around him.
Kind of like we saw in a town called Mercy when, he was like, this is the chance that I have to take out, take vengeance for all of my mercy, I could see that coming up. I mean, the big thing that we have to remember is that this is going to be our lead-in into the 50th anniversary special. If the special is going to be as big and amazing as they say it's, as they're hyping it up to be, this has to be something mind-blowing. I seriously think we're going to get to the end of this episode and it's going to, cut to the credits and we're just going to be sitting there with the holy, just what the frack was that? Right. That's the response. That's what I want to feel at the end of this episode.
Yeah. I think that might be a nice lead if they do start to play with that idea of the him having a bit of a breakdown, of the sheer weariness of what he's been subjected to, and maybe some revelations that we get about, Clara's true identity or intent or whatever the hell she is or represents, causes him to bring this all back up into question again, might connect well if the fact that the 50th is him having to look back to a certain degree on 10 previous iterations of that disappointment or that, the world shifting, the sands under his feet. It could be a nice way to vault you right into that, of him being so worn down by time, no pun intended, worn down by time. That leads us into the 50th where he has to go back and we see all of these points, and I'm not saying from a clip show perspective, but him having to contend with some of the great challenges and disappointments and failures in some cases that he's dealt with over the last, 1400 years.
Yeah, I mean, something like we saw with the end of Patrick Troughton, where he was on trial and he had to recount his adventures and everything that he'd done, do something like that, give it that kind of weight where, there's serious consequences that are going to happen, make him reevaluate everything and that, make him question, who is the Doctor,
Yeah, absolutely. Which gives us a great justification for River's appearance.
Yeah.
Because she is one of the only anchors he has, that thin thread that, she comes in at just the right moments to keep him sane, or to give him something to tell him that whether he looks forward or looks back, there's a handful of things that he can continue to rely on, and she's one of them. So that I see all these little things that could potentially stitch together very well. And I wouldn't be surprised if Steemo decides to go, with, you want to go dark? Okay. Threaten to drive the Doctor insane. Give someone with, that power and that history and that knowledge and that capability and have him, you know, question his sanity. What happens if he loses it? You know, we've seen him go dark. What happens if he snaps? I don't know.
What do you guys think is going to happen with River? Because I don't think that she's going to be in series 8 is kind of where I'm going with this. So do you think in this episode, you know, somehow they're going to end her relationship with the Doctor, or do you know?
We know that they can't kill her off. I mean, that's not a threat that's hanging over her. So I think that if, you know, there was a threat to, you know, take her away so that the Doctor couldn't see her. I mean, that could be a great, catalyst for pushing the Doctor over the edge. Mm. You know, he's seen her die. He knows where he dies, but if he thinks that he's not going to be able to see her again until she goes to the library, that could be enough to do it. You know, putting River in peril somehow, you know, it would be hard to do since they already have killed her off, but you know, finding some way to put her in peril would be a great way to, you know, to push the Doctor into extraordinary circumstances.
True.
Right.
And I think, as we picked up on one of the interviews over the last couple of weeks with Kingston, and we all kind of agreed, she's a character that they can always keep, you know, up their sleeve to bring out at any point because the audience is just going to accept her. However they choose to use her at whatever point, in whatever small or large capacity, you can't get enough of her because of the fact that she's just she's an engaging and interesting and a dynamic character. She causes things to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, anytime you're going to see her in the cast credits for something coming up, you know, and I don't know, Melissa, I think we are going to see her in 8 in small capacities, but I don't think they can pass up the fact that she is that much of a mover and shaker.
I just meant we have no indication that she's going to be.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, she. Yeah, nothing is described yet. Yeah, but I mean, they've both Moffat and Kingston have said that they want to see more of River in the show.
Oh, yeah.
So. There's the desire there on all sides. It's just the practicality of putting her in there. So who knows what's going to happen. But
yeah.
So what is it that you guys are wanting to get out of this series? Like what is it you're hoping for in the next 8 episodes?
I'm thinking. I just hope that the Clara storyline is not dropped and that they do something cool with it. Like, you know, whether it's resolved in the Bells of St. John or whether it carries through to the end of the series, I would just like, you know, something to happen with that because they're building it up so much, but they've built up so many other things. So, you know, I want them to resolve, you know, the Fields of Trenzalore or something, but I don't know that that's going to happen. I hope at least in these few episodes that they get the Clara thing out of the way.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's – well, so you want to see it by end of series, you want to see the question answered, resolved, put to bed.
Yeah, I mean, I do, but of course, if it become, you know, if they're able to hook me so well that I want this storyline to last forever, you know, so much the better.
Mm. Okay, because that's I'm similar, but I want to keep certain things unresolved. To bring it all down and to button it at the end. Or even, you know, a couple episodes in or however they chose to do it. I like the idea of, I always need some sort of a recurrent premise that's pulling me through. And when it gets resolved, I think, oh, okay. Unless you've really threaded me into something else as equally engaging, which we don't have any indication that there's going to be something else coming up within these episodes that is the new, you know, the seething undercurrent of a villain yet unseen kind of thing. There's no bad wolf thing going on. There's no impossible astronaut thing going on. There's not, you know, the question or any of those elements. It's the Clara question. That's we've got to carry us through. I don't necessarily want that answered because I think that would then finally give us carrying through the 50th into series 8 would give us an element of a companion that we haven't had almost to date, which is something that's outside of the Doctor's realm of understanding. The Doctor is always the one who's explaining to the companion, because he is the whimsical, he's the you know, tapping into centuries of knowledge and let me show you what I can do. I like the fact that she rattles him. I like the fact that there's things that he just can't seem to figure out, and it bothers him, and he expresses as much. I think that's a new element that I don't think I would like to see them completely give up. So
I mean, this is the first companion that we've had that really has, you know, outside of River Song, who has really any mystery to her at all. I mean, go back and look at every companion we've had, and I mean, sure, we've learned new things as we've gone on, but there hasn't been anything there that you wanted to learn more about.
Right.
You know, it's all just been like, hey, we're going to flesh out the character a little bit in this way. Oh, okay, that's nice. Can we get back to the Doctor doing his awesome stuff now? You know, this is the first time that we've ever said, okay, yeah, Doctor, shut up. I want to learn more about her.
Yeah.
So if they do wrap, I have to agree with Keir here that I want to see this drag out. I want to have, you know, the drama and the mystery. But if they do wrap it up by the end of the series, they need to have something bigger to keep us in there. You know, that's
what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, and if they do wrap it up, they need to have the Field of Trenzalore, the exploding TARDIS, the silence, everything. Like, hey, you know what? We figured out who Clara is. Now it's time to focus on everything that's been leading up to this point now. So I can see that happening with as big as the 50th is supposed to be. I can see them doing that.
Oh, if we were to learn that the anomaly that is Clara is such that she would allow the Doctor to pass into the time lock and confront the High Council and potentially get his reset on his regens.
Huh.
I can see that.
Which you would then get us into the 50th, because the 50th could all take place in Gallifrey, which would justify all of our little travels back to discuss previous regenerations, because, you know, at that point we can always, we've had this before, you know, the five doctors where, you know, we had to be in the right place at the right time in order to have, you know, multiple iterations of the Doctor in the same time space.
But you said it yourself. We've seen this before.
Yes, but not to this. This could be taking it to the nth degree. You know, this could be something that just takes that premise and blows the doors off. I don't know.
Think that would be a very, very ballsy thing for them to do, in using Clara as a way to either, you know, give the Doctor the chance to confront the Time Lords, or vice versa, give the Time Lords the chance to confront the Doctor.
Oh, channel through her or something, or maybe she has been a tool of the council all along.
Yeah,
which is why she keeps popping up along his timeline.
It would make sense if she's not bound in time. You know?
Ooh, a little chills. Do it again.
Now we're coming up all these great theories that, you know, we don't have time to discuss them.
Right. Well, this gives us something that we can then vault through for the remainder, because now, as it stands at this point of recording, I will be chewing on new content in 2 days, 21 hours, and 41 minutes to the second. So, but who's counting?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, next week, we will be jumping right into the new stuff. We will have the Bells of St. John to discuss, and hopefully some new information on Clara. We'll return to the one episode per week kind of format from there. Let us know what you guys are looking forward to. Let us know what you think of the Bells of St. John once we get there. You know, send us emails at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. Find us on Facebook. Go and leave comments on the show @GallifreyPublicRadio.com. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. So, you know, head over there, find your favorite method, and send us your feedback. Let us know what it is that you're looking for, what it is that you want to see out of this, and what you're most excited about.
Yeah. Theories. I want lots of theories.
Yeah. We'd love being able to crap on all your stuff.
That's Jay at publicradio.com.
Yeah. No, I'll just edit that part out. Never mind.
Oh. Cleaning up post-production.
I have that power. That's my power. He has that power. All right. Well, do you guys have anything else to say wrapping up?
No. We've spent it on this one. I'm just ready to start watching.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been episode 31 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying Easter is just Christmas for Whovians.
And this is Melissa saying new content, squee.
And this is Kier saying I am the only mystery worth solving.
See you guys next week.
Cheers. Halsey.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, or at our homepage at gallifreypublicradio.com. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
I just saw all your messages about coming late to the party, so
what
I
the hell,
she
woman?
Doesn't even get the messages until late.